What color is your underwear? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today, as usual, in studio is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be here back in the studio, even though it's been a long day for you and a long day for me.
Well, that's okay. They don't get shorter for me for some reason.
In case anybody out there wonders, we don't do this for a living.
I think they might have ascertained that by now if they're regular listeners
exactly.
of our program.
That's pretty clear from listening to it. We definitely are not professionals.
That's right. By no stretch of the imagination, including not turning off our cell phones when we start recording, which is okay. And I got to remind myself to do that, too, at some point. But anyhow, maybe you think it might be a strange question. What color is your underwear? But you know what? You might as well go ahead and be prepared to answer that question, because sooner or later, somebody from the government is going to ask you that question. Now, I know the tables were turned back about 20 years ago when Bill Clinton was a candidate, and he wasn't asked about the color of his underwear, but he was asked whether he preferred boxers or briefs. Honestly, he preferred neither one, I think, because of some of the infidelities that he was engaged in. Many people would be rightly concerned, I believe, Charles, if someone from a government agency started asking intrusive, personal, really none of their business questions such as, what color underwear do you wear? But that doesn't seem to bother certain federal agencies like the Internal Revenue Service, who, well, beyond the normal uproar that they usually raise this time of year with the fact that they're collecting voluntary mandatory contributions from all of us, they have now decided that they are going to have some interesting interfaces with particular groups in our culture. Those particular groups all seem to have a similar theme, Charles. All those groups seem to be loyal, patriotic American citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, probably many of you in our listening audience would be considered members of some of those groups. They're called the Tea Party, or the 9/12 groups, or the Patriot groups, that have sprung up across from each end of the country, all the way through the middle. I mean, even in liberal areas like New York, California, and other places, you're going to find Tea Party organizations. Well, that doesn't seem to be sitting too well with our good friends at the Internal Revenue Service and in the Obama administration, because they began to, well, shall we say, Chuck, scrutinize much more carefully, maybe carefully is not even the right word, much more intently some groups' applications for nonprofit status than others. Now, many of our listeners may have heard about this already, but there's some new wrinkles involved in this game now. So,
well, since I'm bad cop.
Be bad cop, please.
I'm bad cop. You're being kind. What they're doing is essentially violating the Fourth Amendment of these groups. And the fact is, do groups have collective rights? The answer is yes, they do. Individuals have rights. Groups have rights. And what's being done here is that the privacy of these groups is being violated. There are groups of individuals out there who work in government and work in the left side of the nonprofit sphere who think that all conservative groups should be required to reveal everything about themselves while they themselves are allowed to keep their privacy. I'm not speaking as if I know for sure that the groups on the left side of the spectrum are being asked the same questions, because I don't know.
Well, we kind of have an indication a little bit here, Chuck, because according to records that have been brought forward, in 2010, there were 1,700 applications for the status of 501c4. Now, 501c4 is a federal IRS tax statute status for nonprofit organizations that allows them to be called a social welfare organization. Now, folks, you've all heard about C3s. You all know what a C3 is, although you may not have known it's a 501, it's a section 501c3, which is a subheading of the federal tax code that basically says that they're an educational organization and that your donations to them are tax deductible. Well, there are other 501c subheading organizations that can be formed for as a nonprofit. And they go all the way up, I think, to a 501c17 or 18, depending on what type. I mean, you can have a veterans organization or a trade association or a maritime commerce associate, you know, various things get their own separate little berths in the nonprofit tax code. And a 501c4 is one that's called a social welfare organization, which means that they are going to be doing certain things such as lobbying on legislation or initiating legislative activities that an educational organization like a 501c3 wouldn't be permitted to do under the IRS tax rules. You see, because basically when you got a C3 and you're giving people a tax deduction for their charitable donations, it can only be used for public education purposes and only to a very limited extent if you file the right paperwork with the federal government. Can you do anything that would be considered advocacy work or lobbying type work, such as going out to the grassroots and ask them to make phone calls to elected officials or saying support or oppose particular legislation or ballot issues? And heaven help us if you utter a breath about a candidate for office as a 501c3, although many groups such as the Alliance Defense Fund have worked with churches during election time to get them to actually endorse from the pulpits and send a videotape of their actual in-pulpit endorsement to the IRS begging them to file an action.
Well, a lot of people don't understand, and a lot of churches don't understand, that honestly, your donations to a church are tax deductible whether it's got a 501c3 status or not.
Well, that's correct. But for other non-church type right. nonprofits, there are a myriad of rules that have to be followed.
Okay, let's give, for instance, the Principled Policy Institute. The Institute for Principled Policy is a 501c4. Have we got our designation back yet?
No, we haven't, because just about the time we were getting ready to refile this, this issue came up. So okay. I have intentionally held back, wanting to see how this thing's going to play out.
The IRS pulled a fast one several years back, and Congress passed a law. And nobody knew about it.
Right.
It got snuck through on a farm bill or, you know, some one of the tricks that they use to hide things that they don't want to be responsible for, held responsible for at election time. And what it did was there was a piece of paperwork that was supposed to be filed by anybody who brought in a threshold amount of money.
Right. And that threshold was usually somewhere in the neighborhood of under $25,000
right.
per year. Now, that's in donations, et cetera, whatever. If your organization as a one of these 501Cs, whether it be a C3 or C4, had gross receipts of under $25,000 per year, usually what happened after you got your initial determination from the IRS is for the first year or so, you filed what they call 990s, which are
right.
annual tax returns for nonprofits. But once they saw that you had a couple of years where you weren't crossing that threshold, they in the past they sent you a letter, and our organization has one that says you're exempt from filing as long as you stay under this threshold, which, well, for good or for bad, we've stayed under that threshold for the last 10 years.
Let's put it this way. Unfortunately, we've been under that threshold for about 10 years.
For 10 years now.
Well, the law was changed so that all of a sudden, it didn't matter how much money you brought in, you had to file the 990.
Or what they said was they changed the level. It went from $25,000 to $10,000, and then you had to file this postcard form. Now, the only reason we know about this is because, and this goes through some permutations within our own organization, I just happened to subscribe to a nonprofit newsletter called GuideStar, and they had an article in here about all of these organizations that were getting ready to lose their tax exemptions because of this change in the law that had happened 3 years earlier. Well, I started reading it and thought, well, what are they talking about? We never received any kind of a notification from the Internal Revenue Service of any kind of a change in our filing status, any kind of a requirement that we had, because this was actually buried in a very large bill back in 2007 as one little single line item or two. Over 375,000 nonprofits across the United States all were in the same boat we were in. They didn't know about the change.
Right.
They had been ones who had been under that exemption in the past. They had not, since 2007 tax year, been filing this little postcard form that they didn't know existed. And at the end of 2010, the IRS was going to basically pull all of their exemptions yep. and throw them out of the nonprofit world.
So what happens is, essentially, groups like ours didn't file the paperwork, And one day this thing comes to light after the deadline had already passed. And I had asked about it of our treasurer because so happens that, as you know, I'm associated with Camp American. Well, Camp American is a 501c3. And 501c3s are strictly educational groups. We're not allowed to do any lobbying. We're not allowed to talk about candidates. We do education. That's fine with Camp American. Our job, as far as we're concerned, is to teach people how to discern what a decent candidate is, not to endorse candidates. So we're fine with that. Someone mentioned to my brother-in-law, who is the treasurer of Camp American, have you filled out this paperwork? And he's like, what paperwork? And I think an accountant type basically said, you have to file this paper. Well, at the last minute, he filed the paperwork. He filed the postcard form.
But unfortunately, because of family relations, he never called you to tell you about it.
Well, he called me and said, you know, we had to do this. And I'm like, what?
Really?
So what we did was we sent our treasurer out from the Policy Institute to do research. And he actually found a list of groups that were preparing to lose their, that were going to be losing, they were going to get the official notification that they had lost their
nonprofit,
nonprofit status. And guess what? The Institute for Principled Policy was on the list.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, before you feel bad for us, we honestly are actually looking at this as a blessing in disguise because, frankly, given the new parameters that are out there, I think God actually protected our organization from the IRS coming in and getting too nosy with us. Not that we have really anything to hide.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, when you're a small organization and you really don't have a lot of resources to comply with the list of requirements that the IRS is now putting on certain groups, and we're going to talk about that here in a minute, would actually cost us more than we bring in.
Yeah, exactly.
To be able to comply. And so therefore, effectively, if they can't get you by negating your nonprofit status, they'll try to shut you down by basically putting you in such a paperwork jam that you're not going to be able to survive. So, honestly, right now, we're operating kind of in a quasi-status of an unincorporated entity, which means we can do whatever we feel like.
Pretty much.
and if people want to donate to the Policy Institute, now, first of all, when you donated to us before, you couldn't write it off on your taxes. You donate to us now, you still can't write it off on your taxes. But the point is, we're going to still use the resources the same way we've always used them to produce these programs, to write our monographs, to lobby the legislature, to bring to account those who are out there violating the Constitution and God's word. We're going to do what we've always done, but this time we're just not going to worry about whether or not the IRS likes it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm being somewhat conspiracy-minded, not too much, but a little bit. I'm of the strong opinion that this was done during, I think this was done during the period when both houses of Congress were under Democratic control.
Yes, well, actually, this bill was passed. Yeah, the bill was passed when Congress was under Democratic control, yes.
And the reason I'm bringing this up is I think the IRS wanted a free look at what everybody's doing.
In the nonprofit world.
In the nonprofit world. And the easiest way to do that is to throw everybody off the rolls and force them to reapply for their nonprofit status.
Right, to get reinstated so they can ask you a bunch more questions. Now,
that's right.
But folks, and then we have new organizations that are forming, and of course, obviously, from 2008 forward, those new organizations, many of them are the Tea Party groups, the 912 groups. As a matter of fact, as I was getting around to, and we kind of wanted to give you a little bit of education on what a C4 organization was,
right.
C4s also can do something C3s can't do, which is engage in political activity, including candidate endorsements and donating to campaigns. C4s now can do that because of the United States Supreme Court ruling in a case called Citizens United, which basically treats labor organizations and nonprofits and corporations the same way that political entities have been treated in the past. So if you have a C4 or C4-like organization, you can act much as a PAC does without having to go through all the owner's paperwork of filing for PACs.
I'd want to ask somebody in that case if how exact that nonprofit status is because in that case, a C3 might be able to do candidate endorsement.
No, they kind of drew the line on it at this. I think C3s are still stuck in a limbo of only being educational arms because they're offering tax deductions to the contributors.
Well, and
that's where it gets a little hairy.
That's true because, for instance, if you give money to Camp American at www.campamerican.com, it is tax deductible.
It's tax deductible. That's right.
And in fact, if you take one of our Institute on the Constitution classes for which Camp American is the sponsor, part of your tuition is deductible.
Is tax deductible. That's
because
right.
What we do is we set a charge and it mostly covers the books and the materials for the class. And when we set the price, we said anything over and above that will be a donation to Camp American to go into the coffers to help us run our summer camp and to run our educational operation. And so usually about $20, depending on what the books cost us at any given time, usually about $20 of the thing is tax deductible of your fee to take one of our Institute on the Constitution classes.
Right. It's another one of those little benefits that you get from taking an IOTC.
That's right.
But going back to that, so C4s are filed all the time now, especially now with Citizens United. A lot of groups want a C4 because, hey, we can get engaged politically without having to go through all of the expense and maintenance of a PAC. So what the IRS has done, and like I said, in 2010, there were 1,700 applications for 501c4 status. 1,400 were approved. So it sounds like, yeah, the majority of them were approved. Of the 300 that they've held in limbo, over half are Tea Party groups. Over half of them. And those Tea Party groups, over the last few months, received letters from the Internal Revenue Service saying, well, we have a little situation here, and I'll actually read you here, because we've got a letter that went to one of the Tea Party groups here in Ohio, and we'll put this up on our website because it's public record, and it's been redacted, so you don't know who it went to, et cetera, and phone numbers and things have been blacked out. So the person was very responsible when they put this online. But the letter says, "Dear sir or madam, we need more information before we can complete our consideration of your application for exemption. Please provide the information requested on the enclosure by the response due date shown above." Now, this letter was sent March the 1st of this year, and the due date was March the 22nd, also of this year. So they had 21 days from the date that the letter was issued, which you know they didn't get it in their hands that same day.
Oh, no.
In order to answer a questionnaire that had 35 separate questions, each of them with many subparts, asking for very, very detailed information. And ladies and gentlemen, later on in the program, we're going to read some of these questions and detail out to you what the IRS is digging for. But it says, your response must be signed by an authorized person or an officer whose name is listed on your application. Also, the information you submit, and this is in bold print, the information you submit should be accompanied by the following declaration. That's my bold voice.
Yes.
And here's my italicized voice, because this is all italicized. Under penalties of perjury, I declare that I have examined this information, including accompanying documents, and to the best of my knowledge and belief, the information contained all the relevant facts relating to the request for the information, and such facts are true, correct, and complete. And so basically, you've got to go through all of this, and basically says, if we do not hear from you within that time, so this is now less than 21 days, we will assume you no longer want us to consider your application for exemption and we'll close your case. Okay, if you give the time, and we're looking at what they're asking for, Chuck, you probably have to ship a box back to them with all the information and the data in it. So by the time you got your shipping done and everything else, let's say 2 days on the front end and 3 days on the back end, you're looking at 16 days in order to pull all this information together. It's not a lot of time, and later on when we read through some of these things, you're going to understand why that's not a lot of time.
Right.
As a result, it says if you close your case, and as a result, the Internal Revenue Service will treat you as a taxable entity. In other words, we're probably going to file charges against you as being a business enterprise that should have been collecting taxes and filing forms and getting a vendor's license, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Tea Party groups, including our own Tea Party groups here in Ohio, have decided not to go gently into that good night, as they say, Charles. And on Wednesday of this last week, and we're recording this on Thursday evening, So this is just very early, just yesterday. There was a coalition, a press, at the National Press Club, there was a press conference held by some of the National Tea Party group leaders to announce the formation of the Liberty Defense Foundation. And I'm not sure what they're filed as, if they're filed as a C4 or not. Yeah. But
that would be a good guess.
That would be a good guess. But what they are there to assist grassroots organizations in fending off the long questionnaires from the IRS when filing for their C4 nonprofit status. And a couple of the folks, it was Eric Wilson from the Kentucky 912 Project and Toby Marie Walker from the Waco, Texas Tea Party were part of this press conference on Wednesday. Now, you know, they said, you know, hey, we really don't want to be here, but since President Obama seems to be targeting Tea Party and Liberty groups with the IRS, we got to fight back. We've got to take the fight to them. Now, this is kind of akin to David taking the fight to Goliath, but we all know how that biblical story turned out. So I kind of have a lot of hope because, you know, Chuck, you and I sat here and we looked through and we read some of this. We read some of the questions. Honestly, it would be, I'm not sure if we don't have a good constitutional case about their Fourth Amendment and maybe even their Fifth Amendment rights being violated by this federal agency by asking these type of intrusive questions and basically blackmailing them with the threat of closing their case, removing their nonprofit status, and putting them into taxable entity status. Again, this is another one of those, I think, that Jefferson, as he wrote in the Declaration of Independence, about the swarms of officers that were sent forth to eat out the substance of the colonists. That's the IRS to a T.
Oh, absolutely. Now, just so everybody gets it, what are your Article 4 rights, your Amendment 4 rights? The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So, in other words, you have the right to have things in your private papers that are private.
Amazing, isn't that?
Yes.
But not according to the IRS, because as long as you're forming as an organization or a group, hundreds of Tea Party groups around the country receive similar letters from the IRS as the one we read to you, requesting thousands and thousands of pages of information. And for some of these groups who've been around for a while and are actively doing lots and lots of events and activities and political engagement, yeah, it can run into the tens of thousands of pages of material. So just to give you kind of a flavor of it, Ms. Walker from the Waco Tea Party basically said that the IRS demanded from them every Facebook, Twitter, and social media post released by her organization over a 2.5 year period. Okay, now I know that a lot of people out there are very savvy with social media and social media aggregation, but come on, ladies and gentlemen, who in their right mind is going to sit there and read over 2.5 years worth of tweets from an organization to determine whether or not they should get a nonprofit status?
Well, hold on. If you're the Internal Revenue Service, what you do is you bring in college interns.
Oh, well, that's true.
And you turn them loose on this kind of stuff. It's the same way. Basically, for instance, sometimes when an investigation is being done, they'll bring in interns and somebody has run things through a shredder. They'll have them put the bits and pieces of the stuff run through the shredder together to see if there's any evidence.
I hope these are unpaid college interns that we're talking about here and not paid with our tax dollars.
Oh, don't kid yourself.
Oh, I know. I know.
There is no, you know, in some case, I think it's illegal not to pay an intern. And yet there are places like the major networks who do it all the time.
Oh, sure.
And radio stations and that kind of stuff. So people come in and get the experience. They get paid in quote-unquote experience. But what that means is that, sure, they're not going to pay somebody who's making, they're not going to pay a $400 an hour attorney to look at it. They're going to pay an $8.50 an hour intern.
Of course.
To look at it and basically look for keywords.
Well, and you're right, and that's probably what they're going to do. Also, they had asked for transcripts of daily radio show broadcasts. Chuck, do you and I keep transcripts of our daily radio broadcasts here on this program?
No, we don't even have all our old programs posted. Some of them are in an archive. So.
Yeah, well, so that would be kind of difficult. So then we'd, I guess if it was up for us, we'd actually have to turn around, take all these audio files and get somebody to transcribe
them.
That's
it. We'd have to
pay
somebody,
a transcriptionist to do. Now we're up to what, about 150 programs?
Yeah, we're probably over 150 with the archive stuff.
Oh, okay, so we're looking at the very minimum of about four to five pages worth of transcribing per program. So you're looking at about 750 to 1,000 pages just in radio programs that we would have to submit if we were doing this. Which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, and if any IRS agent who's listening, we're not.
Yeah, not doing it.
We're not doing it. So, but basically,
in the words of George H.W. Bush, not doing it.
Not gonna do it. Wouldn't be prudent. Not at this juncture. But basically, and then Ms. Wilson went on to say that one organization had to provide book reports of every book recommended or read by their group to the IRS.
Well, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, we have 75 books just in our catalog of books we're recommending to people. And okay, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, okay, we've read them all. But the point is, are we going to sit and do book reports on all of them so that to satisfy some pencil-pushing functionary in the Internal Revenue Service so they can see whether or not we are being subversive or too political? Well, gee, if they looked at our book list, they'd be scared to death.
Yeah, not going to do it.
Not going to do it.
Wouldn't be prudent.
That's right. And if you want to see what kind of books that we recommend, go to the principledpolicy.com website. Check them out. Hey, do us a big favor. Order one.
Yeah. We actually have two stores.
Yes, we do.
We have an Amazon store for newer releases.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have an online store in which we have some books, some of which are out of print.
That's right. But should still stay in print. And,
yeah.
And one of these days we'll be talking about maybe putting together a publishing imprint for the Institute for Principled Policy. But that's kind of in the future.
Right. So please help support the Institute and go out and look at the books we're recommending and buy one from us. I think you'll be amazed. Every once in a while we'll go around and do a show where we haul our big giant boxes full of books in and haul them back out again. But we're usually lighter because somebody always buys a book. So buy one online. It's cheap and easy. And we have some really decent prices on some books that are really, really, really getting hard to find. And the reason we can do that is because we have them and we want you to read them.
That's right. So before we start doing book reports on all 75 books we've got in our online store, we're going to basically hope that the Liberty Defense Foundation starts being very successful in their attempt to push back against the Internal Revenue Service. Now, Chuck, as you know, as these letters started going out, the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow's group, actually sent out two Tea Party groups around the country and through groups like American Majority and others, a letter basically telling folks that they would defend any Tea Party group who had an issue with the IRS over this issue for free. So in other words, they see, as well as we do, the massive intrusion on the Fourth Amendment rights of these organizations and are willing to help defend them for free against the IRS. I mean, honestly, this is kind of red meat stuff for organizations like the ACLJ.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, this one, and when we get to here in a minute, folks, when we start reading some of these questions out that the IRS asked one group in Ohio, which are indicative of the questions they're asking other Tea Party groups around the country. I mean, we've talked about the ones that we just said about book recommendations and transcripts, they pale in comparison to some of the things that they're asking from this Ohio-based group.
Absolutely.
But Chuck, you know, when it gets right down to it, we hope that these folks are successful. But as you had done some research, the commissioner of the IRS, a gentleman by the name of Douglas Shulman, testified in front of a congressional panel and said, well, no, this is just business as usual. We're not putting any extra heightened scrutiny on any of these organizations. This is just our standard operating procedure for how we go about determining whether or not these people are really eligible for tax-exempt status.
Let me ask you a question, Barry. I think you filled out the original paperwork
for our
501c4.
Yes, I did.
Did we have to answer any questions like this?
We didn't. Like this, no. They did send one letter asking for just a couple of pieces of clarification, which was more than happy to supply to them because it wasn't intrusive. It was just, okay, you know, what kind of activities you've already had kind of thing. And so just generic stuff. It wasn't intrusive. As a matter, and I've looked at this letter they sent to this Ohio group. Honestly, Chuck, if they'd have sent that to us in our first blush back 10 years ago when we were filing for the nonprofit tax exempt status, we wouldn't be here today because I'd looked at it and said, forget this. We're doing this. But back then you didn't have it where you have a situation where they've already tried to shut down over 375,000 nonprofits in the country. You didn't have the Tea Party movement, who now looks like it's selective targeting and enforcement because hundreds of Tea Party groups all got this particular letter or some nuanced variation of it. We would have been out there floating alone.
Well, what's interesting is we haven't heard any left-wing groups complaining because, you know,
not a single one of them are complaining about this.
They would be complaining just as loudly if they got these questionnaires, and it doesn't look like, again, we don't know for sure because we're not on the board of any left-leaning groups.
Thank God.
But we're not hearing the hue and cry from the left, which means they're not getting the question.
Well, you're right. Now, you read a quote from Director Shulman.
Yeah.
Or from the commissioner. I want you to read it out loud again because it's something that's very telling in it.
Now, this from the story first.
Okay.
IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman said last month, testifying before a congressional panel, that the IRS is conducting its usual examination process for 501c4 applicants to determine tax-exempt status and is not targeting the Tea Party. Okay, well, we've called that into question already.
That's
Here's
right.
the quote. The notion that we're targeting anyone, I think, is off because, you know, these people are going through an application process that they voluntarily decide to do that isn't required under the law, he told a House Appropriations Subcommittee on March 21st.
Okay, stop right there.
Exactly.
Okay, Commissioner Shulman just gave the game away, whether he meant to do so or not. This application process isn't required under the law. Neither is any other nonprofit application process. Such as churches. If a church wants to give a tax exemption to a parishioner for a donation, and that parishioner wants to take it on their taxes, so be it. They don't have to file to the government to ask. Honestly, we didn't have to file to the government to be a C4. It's just that a lot of people like to take the comfort in having that, what they call a determination letter on official stationery from the IRS saying, hey, you made the grade. We're going to grant you your boon because we are king and we're going to give you your petition that you brought to your sovereign lord and allow you to work under us and pay your tithe and your homage to us. Shulman just basically said it. This is a application process that they voluntarily decided to do that isn't required under law. According to Shulman, there's no law that says if you want to go out and say that you're a social welfare organization that you have to go and get the approval of the IRS to do it.
And what law has Congress passed that allows the IRS to use a voluntary process as a information fishing expedition?
Well, one would go back and say the 16th Amendment, Chuck. But, but we all know that, you know, once we started with the income tax and you formed the IRS, that sooner or later somebody couldn't resist the urge of taking something with that much intimidation power and control over the American populace.
Sure.
And using it as their own personal fishing boat in order to troll for whatever information they thought they could find useful. They just started doing it now.
Well, that's exactly why the founders put all the restrictions on federal power in the Constitution itself. And the fact is that groups like the IRS have been working on laws and quote-unquote rules, regulations, and those kinds of things for years to try to force people to bypass their rights. For instance, this whole idea that you have to sign a perjury statement in order to do a voluntary operation. When have you ever had to sign a perjury statement to give a voluntary statement in the past?
Well, I guess that means it's not voluntary then, is it?
Well, yeah. As we know from the language of the Internal Revenue Service, the payment of the income tax is a voluntary operation.
Yeah, it's voluntary. It's mandatory voluntarism.
That's it. It's mandatory voluntarism. They will tell you right out that no, compliance is voluntary. You don't have to comply. Now, what happens when you don't comply? Well, the first thing that happens when you don't comply is you are arrested.
Ask Kent Hovind, who's sitting in a federal jail cell in Florida, because he refused to comply with collecting and submitting employment taxes to the IRS.
Well, Dr. Dino, and in fact, okay, let's take a case, the Indianapolis Baptist Temple.
Right.
Of
Greg Dixon.
Greg Dixon, yes. How many years ago now? 10 years ago or
so? Oh, it's got to have been at least 8 to 10 years, yes.
Yeah. Well, the whole deal was not the fact that they didn't pay their income tax. They refused to do withholding. They treated all employees as private contractors and told them that they would have to do all the withholding and the Social Security payments and the Medicare payments and all that rigmarole on their own because they were acting as private contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And the IRS moved in, stole the church, sold it.
That's right.
Charged them with violating the IRS code, a voluntary code. And they were a nonprofit entity. And there is no Indianapolis Baptist Temple pastored by Pastor Greg Dixon anymore. And we actually had pastors in this area on the air talking about how what a horrible thing Greg Dixon had done. And I'm like, no, it was clear to all the employees that worked for Indianapolis Baptist Temple that they were private contractors.
Exactly.
It was made clear and that they would be paying 100% of their Social Security and 100% of their Medicare and Medicaid payments. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter that all the money was paid. Because it was. There were no back taxes. What was refused was becoming a withholding agency. And that just simply wasn't allowed, and the property was stolen and sold.
Well, and honestly, this is kind of where we're heading to with this as well. Now, folks, I want to take some time here, and I want to spell out to you what the IRS is actually looking for. Now, this was sent to one of the Tea Party-type groups here in the state of Ohio at the beginning of last month. We read to you this penalty of perjury declaration. Now, you get down to the bottom, it says additional information requested. Okay, number one thing, please read the penalties of perjury statement on page one above. Then please sign and date below indicating you agree to the declaration. So in other words, you got to swear to that first with your name and a date. Second thing, provide a printout of a sample of your website's pages. Okay, what is a printout of a sample of your website's pages? Do you like aggregate them so you lay all the pages out in like little thumbnail boxes and then print that page out?
This is a redundancy. Basically, what they're saying is give us copies of all your website's pages.
Including any pages with restricted access. Now, restricted access pages usually are members-only sections of sites. Sort of like trying to get into ALEC. I'm sure they didn't get one of these letters. Trying to get into ALEC to find out who's funding them.
Well, yeah.
That's absolutely a restricted access page.
We're finding out because their funding agents are dropping off like flies these days.
And we're going to be talking about that on a separate program. Also, number three, provide details regarding all of your activity on Facebook and Twitter. That's that social media aggregation thing. If available, provide hard copies of all advertising you've conducted using social media outlets. Gee, why don't they just go out to social media and type in the name of the organization and pull it all up?
Well, they're asking you to do the investigation
against yourself. Against self-incrimination,
right.
Which is another violation of your Fifth Amendment rights. That's
and
right.
Do organizations have Fifth Amendment rights?
You betcha.
You bet they do.
You betcha.
Okay, let's read that. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. Where's the grand jury here?
That would be a tax court.
Except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Huh. So much for that. If you're found not guilty in a court, you'll simply be hauled before a federal court on civil rights charges, or twice be put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation.
That's right. So basically now we have a violation of both the Fourth and the Fifth Amendment by the IRS just in the first few questions. Well, they keep going on, because after they ask you to describe every employee, board member, officer, director, anybody who's ever touched your organization, you have to give a resume for each person who's ever been involved, past and present. And if your organization's an older organization, Chuck,
that could be.
You might have board members who've passed on. What are you going to do, call their widows up and say, hey, can you send me his resume? I know it's a little out of date, but you know what I'm saying.
Now hold on. I'm on the board. I didn't have to submit a resume to join the board of the Institute for Principal Policy or to be on the board of Camp American.
Boy, that was a big oversight on my part. We're going to correct that at our next board meeting.
Work on that, yeah.
No, but here, the IRS keeps going. Fifth question. Now, folks, in this letter to this Ohio group, there are a total of 35 questions, okay? 35 separate requests, demands, you might say, for very specific information. And we've only given you just that brief overview of the first few. Now, here's the fun one. Number 5, list each past or present board member, officer, key employee, and members of their families who, A, has served on the board of another organization. So what if one of my employees' spouses serves on the board of something in their local community? Why would I care?
Or on a corporate board.
Why do I have to pull that information together? B, was, is, or plans to be a candidate for public office. Now remember, this is every past or present board member, officer, employee, and members of their families. Okay. Indicate the nature of each candidacy. Okay. C, has previously conducted similar activities for another entity. Okay. That doesn't make any sense either. D, has previously submitted an application for tax exempt status. Then they want you to provide minutes of all board meetings since your creation.
Wow.
Minutes of all board meetings since your creation. And regarding your fundraising, 7, provide all copies of all solicitations the organization has made regarding fundraising. Provide copies of all documents related to the organization's fundraising events, including pamphlets, flyers, brochures, web page solicitations. Provide a listing and details regarding all fundraising expenses. Okay, you know, Chuck, I used to be the head of a statewide nonprofit, a fairly sizable one called the American Family Association of Ohio. I remember every year during tax time having to set with an actual stick ruler with our newsletters, figuring out what percentage of each newsletter was fundraising, what percentage of it was direct action. And since we'd filed all that extra paperwork at the time, for our direct and our grassroots lobbying, we had to break it all down and aggregate that out for our 990s.
That's your
column inch stuff. Yeah. It's all out there already. They're asking for something that they've already got for most of these entities. Now, they keep going here. Your merchandise sales. Okay, Chuck, could you and I provide a vendor list of all vendors that we've ever worked with the Institute? That would be everybody we've bought one of the books from that goes into our catalog. That would be any website vendor that we've ever worked with.
That would be any
organization we ever did a trade show,
exactly,
or a conference or a seminar at.
There are places that we've taken booths at that are really non-entities.
That's true.
They're nothing. They were, organized through an individual or through, oh gosh, this is a nightmare.
Yeah. See, now here's the other thing. Of course, this is kind of specific to this one organization, but I'm sure this question was asked just changing some of the language around to all the others. It says, you will educate the public and work in concert with other citizens to bring about public policy changes. This is probably directly from their original application of their saying what they're doing as a social welfare organization. You'll have monthly meetings, operate a website, conduct candidate forums, organize your community, operate on social network sites, conduct a youth program, and operate other programs to help us gain a better understanding of your organization. Gee, Chuck, I don't know about you. I think I've got a pretty good understanding of their organization just from that list. But the IRS doesn't seem to get it, so please provide us the following estimates. A listing of all your past activities. Indicate the percentages of your time spent conducting the activity. And the total of all activities should equal 100%. And the percentage,
thank you for that.
And the percentage of your funds spent conducting the activity. Total of all activities should equal 100%. Provide a listing of all your planned activities. For how long? Does it mean in perpetuity? Because it says all your planned activities. Indicate the percentage of your time you will spend conducting the activity and the percentage of your funds you'll spend conducting the activity. Well, okay, what if we decide that we're going to plan for the next 10 years? They want to know what you're going to do for the next 10 years so they can determine whether or not something you might do in year 9 might not fit in with your nonprofit purpose, and therefore we're going to violate your application based on that. This is incredible. And they go into more specific detail, asking drill down questions on various things. Aha. You're a membership organization. Provide details regarding all members' fees and benefits. Okay, well, that's fine. But you know what the next question is going to be in a follow-up letter. Please provide a listing of all your members' names and addresses.
That's right.
Okay, I thought this one was hilarious. Provide a list of all issues that are important to your organization. Indicate your position regarding each issue. And Chuck, you and I offline, I told you, basically here's how I'd answer it. Every issue and the right position.
That's right.
Is the way I would answer that question. This is ridiculous. You know, what they're trying to drill down is, oh, these people are going to be touching on something that our administration doesn't want to have happen, so we're not going to give them their little golden ticket so that they can be a C4.
Look, this is the one that really reveals where they're going with this.
Yes, it is.
Because this is nothing more or less than a fishing expedition. If they deem that you could be dangerous to the sitting administration, in a political sense, not in a revolutionary sense or something like that. In a political sense, you're not going to get your status.
That's right. We're not going to let you get, we're not going to let you. And honestly, Chuck, a C4 status doesn't give you much because people are going to donate to a C4. They're not getting a tax exemption anyway. So they might as well be donating to an unincorporated entity where they're not getting a tax deduction anyway.
It's good for us because there are a bunch of stuff we don't have to do regarding filing of tax paperwork.
No, that's true. That's the only upside to it. Okay, well, and then it asks here, okay, and this is, and you're right, this is the drill down. So 16 was the one about the issues. 17, do you publish or distribute materials or conduct other communications that are prepared by or reviewed by another organization? If yes, explain and provide a copy of such materials or communications. They want to know if you're coordinating with anybody.
Yeah, and who.
And who. 18, will you publish and or distribute material in favor of any candidate for public office? If yes, explain. Wait a minute. What about if you just distribute material and publish it in opposition to certain candidates? Does that mean you don't have to answer that question? Because it just says in favor. So in other words, if you take a support position, they want to know why.
Uh-huh.
They want to know what you're going to do and why, if you're going to support somebody. But they don't care if you oppose, because you think about it, a lot of the liberal C4 organizations most likely spend most of their time running attack pieces on candidates on the other side. They never support anybody. They're just used as a tax dog. So we don't want to know who you're going to oppose, because then we mightn't have too much information in our files. Do you or will you rate candidates? Yes, they're all bad.
there you go.
They're all bad. And it says, you've conducted polls of your membership to determine which candidates and issues they are supporting. provide details of this process. Now, remember, this is to your membership. Folks, this is the information they do not have any right to have.
That's absolutely correct. There's no right to any of this.
Indicate how many such polls you have conducted and what you've done with the poll results. Well, you know what? I think the last time we had poll results, we ran them up a flagpole, didn't we? Do they want a picture of the flagpole, or do they want us to mail them the flagpole? Okay. Number 21. An attachment to the form you sent indicated you will not endorse candidates or issues. Is this still accurate? Well, folks, they probably filed for their nonprofit status within like 3 months of this letter being generated. I wonder in 3 months if they changed their mind. It says, if it's not accurate, explain and answer the following. Provide your endorsement criteria. Once a candidate's endorsed, how does your organization handle the endorsement? Provide a list of all candidates you have endorsed. Does your organization notify the candidate of the endorsement? If yes, explain. And do you provide any materials to candidates which they may use to promote their candidacy? Okay, you know what? I'm sure a lot of organizations do endorsements. But the point is that do they really have to? If they've said no, they're not going to endorse, why is this question there? Okay, what you're basically saying is, well, you lied to us on your application because we know really what you're all about. You're about going out there and supporting those Republican candidates, and we want to know who. This is a horrible fishing expedition. And basically, they also want to know if you're associated with any other C3, C4, or 527. Now, 527 is an independent expenditure organization that actually runs political ads. You know, all those horrible ads you see early on in an election cycle. John McCain is still beating his wife. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Those are all 527 organizations. They're running it without coordinating it with the candidates. So that's the reason why they are asking the question earlier about how do you tell the candidates and do you support candidates and which ones do you support? Because if you ever run an ad and say you've supported this candidate, they're going to say you coordinated with their campaign and they're going to fine you for doing so.
If they can think they can get away with it. This is where we really need Congress to step in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they basically want to know if you're associated with any other. Now, think about this. Are you associated, Chuck?
What does that mean?
No, stop. There is a legal difference between the word associated and the word affiliated.
Uh-huh.
Affiliated uh-huh. has a legal connection to it. In other words, if the 501c4, well, it used to be Institute for Principal Policy, was affiliated with a 501c3 entity, like some of our Right to Life organizations have, they have both an education fund
right.
and a society that are linked together. One's a C3 and one's a C4. They're affiliated organizations. That's legal. Associated means anybody that we work with at any point in time, but we're not extending them anything legally, and their actions do not reflect back on our organization. An association is just independent entities that sometimes gets together to talk about things.
So if they want to have a march or something, they call us up and we tell our members and they...
Or we go to a monthly meeting with a lot of pro-family groups where we all sit around the table and talk about issues. Guess what? That makes us associated with all of those organizations. Now, if that's the case, we have to provide the name, federal employee ID number, and address of each organization, describe in detail the nature of the relationships, and do you work with them regularly? Provide copies of all related contracts with such organizations. Now, okay, if you have a contract, are you just associated with them at that point? Or are you actually in a contracting situation where you're hiring them to do something? That's not just an association. That raises to a different level.
Right. This is 1984-esque.
Yes, it is.
And this is 1984. They want to know everything about everybody. And essentially, we want to know every single contact that you've made in the since you started your organization and how much work you're doing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I have talked about this from time to time in organizations we've been in and where we've said, stuff we've withdrawn from because we've said all it's going to take is one guy wearing some piece of apparel from that group to do something really stupid.
Right.
And we'll all be swirling the bowl with them.
We'll be lumped in with the same
what
deed.
What they
That's right.
want is, in case that happens, they want to be able to put the feelers out to everybody who's ever had the most nebulous, thread-like
brush by.
We saw one another once at a rally. They want to be able to go and investigate and possibly lift their status, if not arrest them and indict them for quote unquote criminal conspiracy to deal with it. That's what this is about.
Well, of course it is. And it gets worse, ladies and gentlemen, because question 25, obviously this organization, which filed this status request, has received training from a group called Empower You, which I'm assuming is a national training organization, or maybe even a local training organization, which goes around and helps you to train on how to be better board members, or how to be more better civic activists, or how to run campaigns. I've done that kind of training before. I've trained people that way before. Now, the point is, it appears you've received training. Provide the following for all persons or organizations that have provided educational services to you. A, the name of the person or organization. B, now listen closely, ladies and gentlemen. A full description of the services provided. Here's the kicker. C, the political affiliation of the person or organization. So in other words, if you don't receive training from people who we believe is affiliated politically correctly, we're going to violate your nonprofit status for it. This is nothing but blackmail and intimidation under the color of law.
D, a copy of the educational material used. Well, that'll go in the archives so that when you are indicted, they've already got printed material to take and show somebody to try to convict you with it.
But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, if this is coming from another entity who's providing this training under contract, the educational materials they're using may have copyrights on them or trademark restrictions, and for you to provide it to the IRS is actually violating another entity's privacy because they're not under scrutiny from the IRS until you send them the educational material, that is. Okay, we keep going down and down and down, and I mean down here. Number 27 is a good one, Chuck.
Hold on. I want to know about number 26. We will not mention the name. Let's not mention the name. Why are they asking about a specific individual?
Well, it's hard. Well, probably that individual was the person who filed the application for them. And so they want to know, okay, who are we dealing with here? That one's a real fishing trip, and honestly, we're going to leave that one alone. But 27, here's the deal. Provide details regarding all training you have provided or will provide. Indicate who has received or will receive the training and submit copies of the training material. How do you indicate who has received? Do you just say, oh, this general group here, or these people that we threw together that all showed up at the same place on a Saturday, or if you have a list of the people who registered, they want those lists. In other words, they're trying to see exactly who has been taking training from you subversive Tea Party groups out there.
Yeah. That's exactly what that is.
And it keeps going on and on and on. If you conducted candidate forums, they want to know everything that was said, basically, by every candidate that did participate, was invited, all the details, every material that was distributed, they want it all. And it just keeps going and going and going. Provide copies of the handbills you distributed at your monthly meetings. Provide copies of the agenda for each of your monthly meetings. I thought they wanted a copy of all. Oh, that's your board. So
yeah, that's
not only your board meetings, but not only your board minutes, but your public meetings. Okay, have you engaged in any activities with the news media? 34. Please describe the activities and, if available, provide copies of articles printed or transcripts of items aired because of the activity. So there again, hiring a transcriptionist to basically write down your radio spots, any kind of a interview you might have done, because this includes advertisements in the newspaper, press releases, interviews with the news media, letters to the editor, and op-ed pieces. Gee, what happened about my First Amendment rights, Chuck? So now we got another amendment getting thrown in here. I can't write a letter to the editor that the IRS doesn't want a copy of. What happened to freedom of the press? What happened to my freedom of association? What happened to my freedom of speech?
Well, apparently the 16th Amendment wipes out the 4th and the 5th Amendments.
Well, it is a bigger number, so I guess it does trump it, doesn't it? and it says, well, okay, since you submitted this form, then it appears that you will, to some extent, attempt to influence the outcome of specific legislation. Now, answer all the following for us, and this is the last question. provide copies of all communications, pamphlets, advertisements, and other materials distributed by you regarding the legislation. Do you conduct media advertisements? Give us all of your advertisement to that. And if you directly or indirectly communicate with members of legislative bodies, explain the amount and nature of the communication. In other words, we want to know everything you do in life. What color is your underwear? Ladies and gentlemen, if any of us with any of our organizations, charitable or boards, commissions, the civic groups that we're involved in, the chess club, whatever, if the IRS sent this to your organization, wouldn't you be a little upset? You should be, because they're asking for things they have no right to.
What can you do about it? Please call your congressman, ask for hearings on the nonprofit exemption paperwork that's now being required to get these nonprofit statuses. It's time for Congress to sit on the IRS. It's a perfect time to demand it. It's an election year.
Absolutely. That's part of the reason why the IRS is doing it. It's an election year.
That's right. Well, as usual, we're out of time. So join us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies.